Essay, What is Mindfulness of Living Beings' Kindness? In Life After Life, From Distant Kalpas Onwards, every living being and I have been each other's father and mother. We have been kind to one another. Now, although the passage of time has separated us, and in our confusion we do not recognize each other, it is only logical that we repay them for their toil. How do we know that we are not sons in lives past of those who are now fur-bearing and capped with horns? How do we know that those who now crawl on the ground and fly in the air were not our fathers in lives past? Our parents constantly looked after us, but we left them when we were young. We have grown up and have forgotten their faces. Even less do we remember our family and friends of lives past. And now it is difficult to remember if we were once named Smith or Jones. As our ancestors wail and cry out in the hells, or are born over and over again as hungry ghosts, who can know of their suffering and pain? They are starving. To whom can they appeal? I cannot see or hear them, but they must be seeking rescue and release. The sutras reveal this situation with exceptional clarity. Only the Buddhas could have spoken these words. How could people with deviant views know of this? For these reasons, bodhisattvas observe that even grubs and ants were their parents in lives past and have the potential to be Buddhas in the future. They always think of benefiting them and remember to return their kindness. This is the fifth cause and condition for making the resolve to attain Bodhi. Commentary. What is mindfulness of living beings' kindness? What does it mean to not forget the kindness shown us by all living beings? Living beings means all creatures, and there are 24 kinds, those flying, walking, crawling, and rooted, those born from wombs, from eggs, from moisture, and from metamorphosis, those with or without form, those with or without appearance, and so forth. Even mosquitoes and ants are included here. In Life After Life, From Distant Kalpas Onwards, every living being and I have been each other's father and mother. They were my parents. I was theirs. They were my sons. I was theirs. We have been kind to one another. Now, although the passage of time has separated us, although time has gone by, and in our confusion we do not recognize each other, it is only logical that we repay them for their toil. How do we know that we were not sons in lives past of those who are now fur-bearing and capped with horns? How do we know that we were not their sons or daughters in past lives? How do we know that those who now are very small and crawl on the ground and those tiny insects and bugs that fly in the air were not our fathers in lives past? Our parents constantly looked after us, but we left them when we were young. We have grown up and have forgotten their faces. We left them when we were young, and now have even forgotten what they look like. Even less do we remember our family and friends, parents and children of lives past. And now it is difficult to remember if we were once named Smith or Jones. We can't remember. As our ancestors wail and cry out in the hells, or are born over and over again as hungry ghosts, without being able to become free, who can know of their suffering and pain? Yet, who knows they are in pain? They are starving. To whom can they appeal? Who could they tell of their hunger? I cannot see or hear them, but they must be seeking rescue and release. They certainly must be looking for someone to save them. The sutras reveal this situation with exceptional clarity. Nowhere else but in the sutras is all this explained so clearly. Only the Buddhas could have spoken these words. Only someone with the intelligence and wisdom of a Buddha could explain the detailed principle of past causes and their future retributions. How could people with deviant views know of this? They, of course, don't know about any of this. They don't even believe in cause and effect. For these reasons, bodhisattvas observed that even grubs and ants were their parents in lives past and have the potential to be Buddhas in the future. They always think of benefiting them and remember to return their kindness and to repay their past parents' kindness. This is the fifth cause and condition for making the resolve to attain Bodhi. Essay: What is mindfulness of the suffering of birth and death? From distant kalpas onwards, living beings and I have always been involved in birth and death, and have not attained liberation. Whether we have been among people, or in the heavens, in this world, or in another, we have risen and fallen uncountable times. We ascend or fall in an instant. Suddenly a god, suddenly a human, suddenly an animal, a hungry ghost, or a denizen of the hells. We leave the black gate at dawn, but return at night. We climb out of the pit of iron briefly, but then fall back in again. As we ascend the mountain of knives, our bodies are slashed until not a bit of flesh remains. As we climb the tree of swords, our hearts are slit open. The hot iron does not cure hunger. Swallowing it roasts the liver and intestines. The broth of boiling copper does not quench thirst. Drinking it dissolves the flesh and bones. Sharp saws dismember the body. Once cut, it comes back together again. Clever breezes fan the body. It dies but quickly returns to life. In the city of raging fire, we endure the sounds of blood-curdling screams and wails. In the pot of boiling oil, we hear only cries of excruciating pain. The body begins to freeze and harden and resembles a blue lotus forming a bud. Then the flesh and veins crack open and the body looks like a red lotus in bloom. In a single night, the denizens of the hells pass through 10,000 births and deaths. In a single morning, the sufferings in the hells are what humans would go through in 100 years. The harried wardens of the hells become weary. Who believes that King Yama is not teaching us with this warning? Yet only while actually experiencing suffering do we know its bitterness. But our regrets come too late. Once free, we forget again, and then we create the same karma as before. We whip the mule until it bleeds. Who could know that it is our mother in anguish? We lead the pig to slaughter. Who could know that it is our father in agony? We eat our own sons without being aware, just like King One, and we gulp down our own relatives without recognizing them. This is the way of all ordinary people. The loved ones of yesteryear are now sworn enemies. Rivals of days past are now our blood relatives. Our mothers of past lives are our wives of the present. Our fathers-in-law of old are now our husbands. Those with knowledge of past lives recognize these changes. They feel shame and embarrassment. Those with the heavenly eye see these situations. They find them ridiculous and pathetic. Amid excrement and filth, we pass 9 difficult months. We emerge from the path of pus and blood in a pitiable state. When young, we know nothing and cannot tell east from west. As adults, we become more aware, but our greed and desire arises. In an instant, old age and illness overtake us. Suddenly death arrives. Amid the blaze of wind and fire, our spirit becomes disordered. Our vital energies and blood are exhausted. Our flesh and skin wither and dry up. We feel as if iron needles are piercing our every pore, and as if knives are hacking our every orifice. When the spirit leaves the body at death, it feels more pain than does a live turtle having its shell ripped off before it is thrown in the pot. Commentary. What is mindfulness of the suffering of birth and death? What do the sufferings of birth and death entail? They include the pain of being sick and of growing old, and of myriad other unpleasant circumstances. At birth, the baby undergoes intense suffering and feels as if 2 mountains were crushing him on either side. At death, the 4 elements, earth, water, fire, and air, separate. It is not easy to leave this stinking skin bag. That leaving is excruciatingly painful. Some people say that at birth, the baby undergoes pain like that which a live tortoise would experience if its shell were ripped off. At death, you experience as much pain as would a live cow whose hide is torn off. From distant kalpas onwards, for kalpas beyond reckoning until the present, Living beings and I have always been involved in birth and death, in the sea of suffering, and have not attained liberation. We want to be liberated, so we cultivate today. Yet tomorrow we fool around. The next day, we take it easy. The day after that, we think of eating a big feast, and we want to have a good drink the following day. Thus, we lose our mindfulness and constantly indulge in deviant thoughts. Without the resolve for the way, we cannot attain liberation. We may be born, whether we have been among people or in the heavens. But when our heavenly blessings run out, we may fall into the hells. We spin around in the cycle of birth and death, unable to get out. In this world or in another, we may return to this planet or go to another. We have risen and fallen uncountable times. Perhaps we were originally Chinese, but we became Americans. Or perhaps we were Americans, but we became Chinese. We ascend or fall in an instant. Suddenly a god. Suddenly a human. Suddenly an animal. A hungry ghost. Or a denizen of the hells. We may suddenly find ourselves in any one of these painful situations. We leave the black gate, the gate to the hells, at dawn but return at night. We return to the hells immediately after leaving them. We climb out of the pit of iron briefly, but then fall back in again. We leave the hells, the pit full of implements of punishments such as iron axes, iron knives, iron beds, the mountain of knives, and the tree of swords. We return to this place of suffering after having just left it. As we ascend the mountain of knives, our bodies are slashed until not a bit of flesh remains. The blades on the mountain of knives slash open every bit of the flesh on our bodies. As we climb the tree of swords, our hearts are slit open. Our skin is all slit open as if we had a heart attack. The hot iron does not cure hunger. We eat hot iron pellets because we are famished and nothing else available. But swallowing it roasts the liver and intestines. The broth of boiling copper does not quench thirst. When we take a drink, the liquid is not water. It is molten copper. We drink it, but it does not quench our thirst. Drinking it dissolves the flesh and bones, melting them into nothing. Sharp saws dismember the body. Razor-sharp saws cut the body apart. Once cut, it comes back together again. Once you are sliced into pieces, the winds of your karma, the clever breezes, fan the body. It dies but quickly returns to life. Once you are dead, the clever breezes fan you back to life. When you come back to life, you don't think you will buy a car or live in a beautiful house. Instead of enjoying a life of luxury, you have to undergo suffering. The sufferings are so unbearable that you wish you were dead, but you have to live to undergo your evil retribution. In the city of raging fire, we endure the sounds of blood-curdling screams and wails. In the blazing city of hells, the pain is cruel and unbearable, and the screams are pitiful. We are tossed in the pot of boiling oil. We hear only cries of excruciating pain, the body begins to freeze and harden and resembles a blue lotus forming a bud. The body is blue when cold and looks like the bud of a blue lotus flower. Then the flesh and veins crack open, and the body looks like a red lotus in bloom. This describes the body as looking very pretty, like a red lotus in bloom. In a single night, the denizens of the hells pass through 10,000 births and deaths. They undergo birth and death, death and birth, tens of thousands of times. In a single morning, the sufferings in the hells are what the humans would go through in 100 years. When you are in excruciating pain, you feel that the time is either very long or very short. One day in the heavens of the four heavenly kings is 500 years in the human realm. One day in the human realm is 100 years in the hells. The sufferings that hell beings undergo in one night are equivalent to what we would undergo during 100 years. The harried wardens of the hells become weary. The jailers are always tired because they have so many offenders to deal with. Who believes that King Yama is not teaching us with this warning? The painful states of the hells teach living beings to stop doing evil, but no one knows that King Yama is teaching us this. Yet only while actually experiencing suffering do we know its bitterness. But our regrets are too late. Once free, we forget again. When we aren't suffering, we forget about our pain and about our regrets. And then we commit the same karma as before. We do the same deeds all over again. Once the wound heals, we forget our pain. During the time of suffering, we do all good deeds and avoid all evils. Once the pain is over, we start to kill, steal, engage in sexual misconduct and all sorts of evil deeds, and entertain improper false thoughts. Human beings are creatures without aim or genuine wisdom. We whip the mule until it bleeds. Who could know that it is our mother in anguish? Meat eaters don't understand the principle involved in past causes and future retributions. They don't realize that the mule they beat may have been a relative of theirs in the past. Not only mules, but ants, mosquitoes, bugs, any living, breathing creature, and I have been family members together. Many unclear causes remain. Ignorant of all this, people who scold and hit other beings are actually harming their own flesh and blood. As the Buddha said, all men have been my father, all women have been my mother. And we might also say, all men have been my mothers, and all women have been my fathers. The meaning here is that beings now reborn as men could have been born in past lives as women, and were my mothers. And she could later be reborn as a man. The essay simply outlines these principles, and we ourselves can fill in all the details. Not only people have been my parents, but those now reborn as horses, cows, sheep, chickens, and other animals all have family ties with us, but we turn our backs on becoming enlightened and mix with the defiling dust. We fail to recognize such relations. Thus, we make an enemy of someone who is clearly a father or a mother to us. We whip the mule until it bleeds. Who could know that it is our mother in anguish? Although it is now a mule, it was in lives past my mother. she was reborn according to her offenses as a mule. And we don't recognize her and pick up a whip to strike the animal when it gets lazy and won't work hard. But each time we strike it, our mother from a past life is unbearably pained to the point of tears. Pigs, dogs, and all living beings have been in my family. We all immigrate to different species, looking for a new house to live in. And from out of the belly of a horse, we enter the womb of a mule. How many times have we passed through King Yama's court? We fall from Chakra's palace, but into Yama's pot. After being born in Lord Chakra's heaven, we are reborn again and fall into King Yama's pot of boiling oil. People like to go on vacations and travel. So too do our souls, thinking it is such fun to roam about. Sometimes we roam about and end up in peaceful surroundings, like in a luxury hotel. There is a hot bath and a soft bed to relax on. We banker on these luxuries and like to eat well too, but we end up going down the wrong road due to our liking these luxuries. We like gourmet dishes made with mutton, beef, and pork, and prepared in many fancy ways. But after we eat those animals' flesh, we must repay our blood debts to them. If you take another's money, you must repay that money. If you take another's flesh for food, you also must repay that debt. And having eaten quite a lot of others' flesh, people can't fail to repay their debts. They will be reborn as a pig, duck, or other animal in order to repay those debts. There was a case in point in America. A businessman sold chickens, tens of thousands daily. He looked much like a chicken himself. He might have been a chicken in past lives, and along with his flock was eaten by people. Now he is a human, and past chicken eaters are now reborn as chickens. Now, he kills them for food. He supplied them with nutrition in the past, and now they supply him with nutrition in this life. They nourish their present causes and future retributions together. Just look at sheep ranchers. They look like sheep. They might have been sheep in past lives and been eaten by others. Now, in this life, they want revenge. Look at how very bovine the eyes of cattle ranchers are. Fishmongers resemble fish. You aren't paying attention if you haven't noticed this yet. Whoever now is selling the flesh of any other being was probably just that species of being itself in its past life, now reborn a human, looking for revenge. The net of karma is just this constricting. Yet this net of karma catches us in other ways too. If someone loves her dog, that dog might be reborn a human, as a handsome man, who then gets married to its previous owner. In my hometown, there was a man who was an actor, an opera singer in his past life. He was reborn good-looking in this life, but his bride was homely. She was once a dog in an opera troupe. Now, as his wife, she continued to yelp all day and argue with her husband. He couldn't find a moment's peace and didn't know what to do about his plight. Our past roles and habits, no matter what they are, continue in this life. So we shouldn't feel elated and proud of being human now, doing as we please, thus ending up confused and upside down. We whip the mule until it bleeds. Who could know that it is our mother in anguish? Who could know that the mule he is beating was once his own mother in a past life? Now she is pained beyond her limits. We lead the pig to slaughter. Who could know that it is our father in agony? Dragging the pig by a rope to the butcher's block, The farmer doesn't know it is his own father in a past life. He simply thinks the pig is fat enough for market and butchers it. His father, however, is racked with pain. We eat our own sons without being aware, just like King Wen. King Wen was once in custody. His enemies, wishing to test the rumors that the king had supernatural powers, killed one of the king's sons, cooked his flesh, and served it to the king to see if he would know what was happening. He ate it. If he knew it was his son, he wouldn't have eaten it. Some people say that he knew, but ate it all the same to make others think he didn't know. But, no, if he knew, he wouldn't have eaten. He, through ignorance, made many mistakes, and so do we. Girlfriends don't see that their boyfriends were once their grandfathers, uncles, fathers. It is not for sure who they are. All they see is how young and handsome they are, and they quickly set out to snare them. They catch their man, but the whole scene is upside down. They get everything all confused. Even someone as brilliant and virtuous as King Wen didn't recognize his past relatives. And we gulp down our own relatives without recognizing them. This is the way of all ordinary people. Day in and day out, ordinary people are like this. They eat their past fathers and mothers, their grandparents, their own flesh and blood, and they don't even know. Most are like this. None escape the cycle of cause and effect. The loved ones of yesteryear are now sworn enemies. The close relatives we cherished and loved in past lives may have now become horses or cows. We dine on their flesh. Fine, they say. You eat me now, how heartless. I'll gnaw your bones next time around. And the ties of vengeance are knotted as they swear to get even. Hated rivals of days past are now our blood relatives. Some families don't get along. Our mothers of past lives are our wives of the present. Our fathers-in-law of old are now our husbands. We feel close to them but don't see the past ties and reasons why. So now we become lost and muddled in the shuffle of ensuing rebirths, and everything becomes confused. Those with knowledge of past lives recognize these changes. They feel shame and embarrassment. They are ashamed. How could they hold their heads up when they know what is really happening? Those with the heavenly eyes see these situations. They find them ridiculous and pathetic. In the cycle of rebirth as babies, amid excrement and filth, we pass 9 difficult months in the womb. We emerge from the path of pus and blood in a pitiable state. The baby is born upside down and is a piteous sight. When young, we know nothing and cannot tell east from west. Kids have no education. They don't know anything at all. As adults, we become more aware, but our greed and desire arise. Adults have received an education, but what do they know? They don't know about the paying of debts involved in the cycle of cause and effect. They focus their attention on lust. Women want only to catch a man, and men chase after women. For sure, the stakes are so high that they end it all if they don't get what they want. They are so confused that they fail to recognize that in reality it is all very pointless. In an instant, after the very short time we have in this life, old age and illness overtake us. No girls will want you when you become old and wrinkled. They will see you are old and gray, and they don't want you. In fact, husbands nowadays leave their aging wives and find younger women. The world is getting worse every day. If you can see through all this, then stop being so confused in your behavior and put it all down. Suddenly, death arrives. Death is as swift as a wild grass fire. It overtakes us quickly. Amid the blaze of wind and fire, two of the four elements get out of balance. The wind fans the fire to reach a heat of thousands of degrees, burning things to a crisp. Our spirit becomes disordered, and we lose all correct feeling in our bodies and lose our powers to reason and become oblivious to everything. Our vital energies and blood are exhausted. Thus, marriage leads one to an early death. The two fear living to a ripe old age and wish to die sooner. Girls find boyfriends saying, "Help me die sooner, I don't want to live." Men looking for a way to die find girlfriends saying, "Help me to die sooner." Together, they get involved in love, the road to death. To live, we must have our reproductive essence, our breath, and our spirit. Without our reproductive essence, we die. And we obviously can't live if our breath is cut off. And our spirit is our awareness and consciousness. We live because our reproductive essence and breath are intact. Living recklessly, we end up devouring our own essential energies. Those who are casual and lax and take delight in this kind of lifestyle are seriously upside down. "But what you are talking about will mean the end of the human race," someone may object. Not really, because there is no way that all people will understand or agree with this. No matter how you explain the dangers involved, they still want to tread the path. "It's a dead-end road," you say, but they answer, "I'll just try it out and see." Due to this deeply rooted confusion, it is not easy to get people to wake up. But I'll do my best to tell you all now. Our flesh and skin wither and dry up. When our reproductive essence, our breath, and our spirit are gone, the skin and flesh dry out. The elements return to their respective origins. What is earth goes back to the earth. What is liquid goes back to the water element. Wind goes back to wind, and fire to fire. The four elements break up. We feel as if iron needles are piercing our every pore, and as if knives are hacking our every orifice. At death's door, we feel as if every pore is being reamed by needles. Our essence, energy, and spirit are gone, and our every bodily orifice is pained as if hacked by knives. When the spirit leaves the body at death, it feels more pain than does a live turtle having its shell ripped off before it is thrown in the pot. The turtle undergoes excruciating pain, but the spirit leaving the body at death is even more painful.